Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to Secret Artists Podcast. I'm your host, Annie McGrath, and this week I'm joined by the absolutely fantastic comedian, writer, performer, Ben Target. Ben is an incredible performer and one of the first people that I ever met when I started doing comedy. So I had a lovely chat with him today and I really hope you enjoy listening. You can follow our artworks and things like that on social media at Secret Art Pod. But until then, enjoy the episode. Ben Target is an award-winning comedian and performance artist, known for his surreal style and absurdist work, which explores hope, play, and togetherness. Ben has written and performed for Comedy Central, BBC Three, Channel 4, BBC Radio 4, and Absolute Radio. He won the Leicester Mercury Comedian of the Year in 2011 and got nominated for the Edinburgh Comedy Award Best Newcomer in 2012. He has since gained a loyal following and is part of the cult collectives Weirdos Comedy and the Alternative Comedy Memorial Society. Ben is an excellent artist and I'm delighted to be able to chat to him about all things art. Hello, Ben.
Hello. Thank you for such a lovely introduction. Can you read that like... Every morning. Every time I wake up, you're just standing there reading it over me, powering the hope for the day.
To remind you of all the brilliant things you've done.
Oh, well, that's very super kind.
So for today, you sent through loads of different ideas, all of which I loved as activities that we could do. But can you explain the one that we've decided to work on?
Well, we're going to make a collage or collage. Mm-hmm. As I should really call it. And it's going to be of a place, a physical place that was important to us growing up. And I've decided to choose my backyard in Houston, Texas, where I lived between the ages of 10 and 15. It was the place that I started, I think, to really love making art at school and also did a lot of reading in the garden, often climbing onto the garage roof or garage roof.
I had no idea you lived in Texas.
Yeah, well, my folks moved around a lot, and believe it or not, they sort of wanted me as a child to accompany them. So I ended up, I was born in Singapore, lived in Borneo for 2 years.
Wow.
The Netherlands for 10. And latterly, Jakarta, Indonesia, and Paris, France. So I sort of was carted around quite a bit.
So well traveled. So can you speak lots of different languages?
Well, here's the thing. I'm just extremely lazy. I think it's a real skill of mine. I'm very quick to pick up languages. And when I was in these places, I did my best. And I spoke French really well at one point. But being away from them, I haven't kept it up at all, which is a real shame. I mean, I considered Dutch my first language because I was two when I moved there and went to Dutch school and had Dutch friends. And I remember dreaming in Dutch and still... when the World Cup's on, we'll support the Dutch football squad. What about you? What's your place? What was your special childhood spot?
I'm not as well-travelled as you, but I grew up in North London and then moved to Oxford, went to university in Leeds, and I'm now back living in North London. So I'm not an international, you know, wonder like you are. Although I do have an Irish passport because my mum is from Cork. So,
oh, lovely. That's a good thing to have now.
Yeah. Have you got loads of different passports then?
My dad's from Dundalk, which is close to the border of Northern Ireland. Mm-hmm. So I'm in the process of getting my Irish passport, and most of my cousins are either Australian or Canadian. So strangely, I think I could try to get an Australian passport, perhaps. Maybe I should try and collect more.
Yeah, you should. Well, if you were born in, did you say Singapore?
Yeah.
Could you not get a passport?
I'm not allowed to unless I do national service for 2 years. I'm not sure if I really ever want to be in anyone's army.
I love the idea of you being in the army for 2 years.
Yeah, me trotting around in tiny camouflage shorts. If you could have any passport, which one would you choose? Is there a country that you want to go and visit or would like to live in?
Oh, that's a great question. I'm glad I've got my Irish one now for the purpose of Brexit. And I feel like that would be the easiest to go and live in terms of speaking the language and knowing family there. But I don't know, probably somewhere a bit more exciting. I love Iceland. I've been there. That was a beautiful place. But
lovely.
What about you? Where would you choose?
I was really lucky to get to visit Sri Lanka after my grandparents passed away. My family sort of went to visit places in India that they were really fond of. And I was just blown away by how beautiful it was. And very much was like, oh, I mean, this is unbelievably gorgeous. And Mexico as well. Mexico is stunning.
So I got a bit confused. I thought we were choosing like lots of different places for the collage. But if we're choosing one place, I think I might go for the Cornish Sea and do a collage. Because my grandparents lived there. And so I spent most holidays in the summer, you know, collecting glass on the beach, you know, the smooth glass.
Not just broken shards of bottles from wherever just
slashing my wrists along the coast. No, smooth, nice, smooth glass. I think that's what I'm going to do, my collage.
Lovely.
Have you got coloured paper?
Well, here's the thing. I'm gonna put my collage on the back of a postcard, and I'd like to send it to you so you have like a snapshot of a place that was special
to me. I love
that
idea. I'm going to do the same.
Oh, amazing. I can't wait to get post.
It's not an actual postcard. I've just cut it's like slightly bigger than A5 piece of white paper. I don't know if you can see it, but I'm just going to put my collage on top of that.
Ideal. Perfect. And I haven't got colored paper, but I have gone and collected a bag of sort of beautiful bits and pieces, offcuts of things that I thought were interesting, like business cards of shops and the corners of old drawings and some wrapping paper. So,
oh, nice.
We'll see how we get along.
Paper that I've painted on prior to this that's dried. So I'm going to use like bits of pre-painted bits of paper.
Lovely. Do you have a favourite colour?
I think sort of phthalo blue, like that deep sort of petrol-y Prussian blue. What about you?
Pink.
Pink. Oh, like look, this is like blue and pink.
Yes.
This is actually neon pink, so that's perfect.
Yeah, my favourite colour since I was the smallest of bairns was pink. I think I had a pink blanket on my bed when I was, I remember having it on my bed when I lived in Holland, and I would carry this blanket around with me, trailing it behind me as a sort of object of comfort. And no doubt it had to be washed frequently because it was sort of dragged through puddles and all the sorts of grim things children get up to and into.
That's so nice. Were people ever judgmental? Because obviously when we were kids, that if a boy liked the colour pink, that was seen as a bit, you know, not what we were supposed to be into. But were people quite open to you being into pink?
Not particularly. I think, yeah, very much for that reason, it was seen as effeminate and people were derogatory about that. But I sort of just, I saw it as a symbol of pride.
Yeah.
And then it sort of literally became pride as I sort of grew up and learnt how to accept my sexuality. I just thought I'd mention as well that I ordered in a pot of copy decks. Do you remember this stuff?
Oh yeah.
And we used to have it in primary school. It smells like if you lived with a fish and it didn't wash itself for a month, that's what it smells like.
Yeah, I do live with a fish. So I...
Do you?
Yeah.
You have a pet fish?
Yeah. Well, it's more of a flatmate, but
okay.
Yeah, I thought I had Fritz stick, but I don't. So I've got this spray mount, which again, I think is quite fumey or some super glue.
Yeah, be careful with that stuff.
I've got some masking tape to like maybe put things in place before I commit to the permanent glue.
Lovely stuff. I seem to remember getting quite high on the fumes of that spray adhesive.
Yeah.
It's pretty potent stuff.
I'm doing the waves at the moment. For the sea. What are you doing?
I'm trying to choose the background. So our house in Texas, my parents painted the door red, which was pretty bright for such a conservative community. We grew up next to Rice University, so it was this sort of quite quaint, I guess like American dream style 50s straight line suburban streets, and all the kids would sort of play in the front yards together. There was a really good community there, and I think that's part of what I miss is how open it was. I've never quite found a place like that since.
Yeah, where has been your favorite of all the places you've lived there?
I think when I left Holland, I really really missed it because. Mm-hmm. I felt I was Dutch. But looking back now, I think I was probably, you know, I'm still very taken by Texas as a place, and I'd like to go back. Just around the corner from my house in Texas was this gallery called the Menhill Gallery, which was this kind of incredible hub of culture that was built, I think, just before the civil rights movement kicked off and became this place for progressive discussion in amongst the conservatism of Texas. And the founders of the gallery collected surrealist paintings, and they have, I think, the biggest collection outside of Belgium of René Magritte's work.
Oh, wow.
I'd often cycle over there with my brother and go and look at Magritte's paintings. And he definitely was my first love of the artists.
Yeah. So have you always been quite into art then, and going to galleries and exhibitions?
Yeah, I was hugely into art. It was the first thing that I remember loving. When it used to rain in Holland, I would sit on the staircase and draw. And I had a really difficult time at school. I didn't learn very easily. I later found out I had what is now determined as special educational needs. And I think art was the one thing I was good at. And when you find that thing that you're good at, you just want to be consumed by it. And it became my way of understanding myself, but also to a certain degree my salvation. It was where my confidence lay. And it was all I ever wanted to do, you know, was become an artist.
But how did you then get into doing comedy? I mean, your comedy is very sort of, like I would describe it as comedy meets performance art. It's very creative and you take lots of risks, and I wonder how you got from you know, being the boy who draws on the stairs to to getting up on stage and clowning.
I appreciate your summary of it, because that's the way I see it. I see myself as an artist working in comedy. Like, comedy is the palette, and I sometimes describe myself as a performance artist with punchlines. I think the reason I got into comedy was because my parents are conservative people, and they were concerned that if any one of us went into the arts, we would end up miserable because of how our society values artists. Mm-hmm. And they did their very best to stop me from studying it, threatening when really? I was 17, told me that I would have to leave the house and not return. So I think, being a sort of coward back then and wanting to belong to a family, I went off and tried to do something that they wanted me to do. And I just...
That must have been so hard. Did it like appeal to a rebellious side in you to just prove them wrong, or were you just keen to please them?
I think, well, at the beginning, I was very keen to please them. So, you know, we bartered over my A-levels. I was allowed to study art as long as I did physics and chemistry. And it was the same when I was at university. My mum sort of took me to the library and wouldn't let me leave until I'd chosen a course that she approved of. And whilst I was there, she chose my modules, and I was just very unhappy. And after that, I tried to get jobs in things that they approved of as well. I used to work briefly in the sort of Barbie like engineering department, building the machines that make Barbies. And I just...
As in Barbie dolls?
Yeah, Barbie dolls.
Wow.
And
was that interesting?
It was, and it was amazing. It was an amazing department to work for. You know, the designs would come in from Hong Kong, where the design department was then. And we'd look at them and we'd basically figure out how to build them and then go off and build the machines and then set up the production lines and then train the operators who actually assemble them, who are just extremely skilled people. And it was an amazing experience, because I think for the first time, I suppose, like, visibly and in the minority in amongst my work colleagues, I was working in Indonesia, so I was one of, you know, three white Europeans in the whole factory, and it's mostly women working in the factory, and most of the people are also Muslim, so everyone goes and prays on Friday, and it was just a really extraordinary I think moment in time for me, making these deep connections with others, but also realizing that this corporate life was not for me, and I was desperate to find a way to get into the arts. So I think when I moved to London and I met old friends doing stand-up, it seemed like the most accessible way to start making art, because anybody, it seemed at the time, could just get up on stage and express themselves, as long as they were trying to be funny. And I think that's probably why I started.
Out of interest, what jobs did your parents do, or what do they do?
My father's an engineer. My mother trained as an archaeologist, and she sort of transitioned from doing that when I was very young to working as a science technician in schools. In my school, actually, the international school I went to. And I remember this one time I was 10 years old, and I went to the bathroom, and I basically zipped up my trousers too quickly, and I caught part of myself in that zip, a very painful part, and couldn't get the zip back down. Was in floods of tears, also horrifyingly embarrassing. and sort of slunk off to the nurse or whoever was on like, you know, healthcare duty at the time. And it turned out to be my mother who, bless her, sort of did her very best to get me out of a very tricky situation.
Is that the best outcome, that it's your mum, or was that more embarrassing that it was your mum?
I think it was probably more embarrassing because I couldn't quickly forget it, you know.
Yeah, that's true. You're taking that home with you.
Did you ever have one of those days at school where things just went very wrong?
Probably. I mean, I never got my penis caught in my zit, if that's what you mean.
That's exactly what I was asking.
So are they quite, have they sort of come to terms with the fact that you've managed to make a career as an artist, or is it still a slight point of contention?
We're actually estranged. We are estranged, so we don't talk, and I haven't seen them in some time. I tried very hard, and I think they were very frustrated with me, and I just got to the point where I didn't feel we were listening to each other, or it was benefiting any of us to be around each other, because it just resulted in conflict. And it made me sad for some time, but in a strange way, I've learned to make my peace with it.
I'm sorry. That must be really difficult.
I think it's difficult on my siblings, who have been thankfully really supportive, but I think it's hard for them to, I think it's hard for them to see this kind of fallout.
I loved your short film, Lock Clown. It's brilliant.
Thank you so much. I loved getting to make it with Stuart Laws and Al Clayton. They're just hands down my favorite people to collaborate with. And we hadn't seen each other in some time. And, you know, getting to work with them anyway is a delight, but especially during this past year where I really have just been in my room kind of working on my computer.
So can you explain a bit about the film and what inspired you to make it?
I think it just came about quite organically. My memory is they had this title, Lock Clown, kind of pretty stupid pun. But we were all talking about how the UK government released that advert.
Fatima should retrain in cyber, that one.
Yeah, basically sort of declaring that artists were, as far as I could tell, useless and a burden to society, and therefore should stop doing what they were doing and go and do something useful, i.e. Working in cyber, spying on other nations, or probably more likely
be the reaction to that.
Yeah, I think you've very much sort of made several generations of artists want to not support you forever. And I suppose for me, it just felt like the voice of my parents coming down from an even higher level. And my first reaction was very much, fuck you. But I think we didn't want to make a fuck you piece of art. We wanted to make a piece of art that was warm-hearted, sincere, despite the sort of fear that I often have in comedy of being sincere, because people don't think it's warranted, or there's a sort of it's perhaps easier to be cynical and get a laugh. But I think really what we wanted to say was that we missed the audiences, which, you know, are the things I've certainly missed the most over the past year, being wedded to live performance, because I love it beyond anything else that I've discovered in life. I realized that that relationship that you have with the audience is sacred. And when it's not there, life can feel quite empty. And I wanted to make a piece that showed that both components are necessary for togetherness, And I think that's what the piece hopefully shows.
Definitely. It's beautifully shot and you're brilliant in it. And it's, you play the clown, of course. it's really great. And there's links at the end, aren't there, about different charities that people can donate to that are supporting creative industries, like the Film and TV Charity and the Royal Theatrical Fund.
Yeah, they've been great. And Next Up have been very supportive as well of performers, mm-hmm. and the Live Comedy Association, which was formed as a response to the pandemic. Yes, it was. Yeah, it was just such a delight to work with such a gifted team, and then make something that I think that we're all really proud of, but also I think will be something we look back at as a sort of a moment of fondness in amongst all this disarray.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The last time we sort of connected was over your brilliant exhibition, which you curated and organized.
Yeah, so I'm so glad that that got to happen when it did. So we did that at the end of 2019, which it went really well. And there were lots of people there and it felt like a joyous celebration of art and comedy. And then everything shut down. So it was well timed. But I loved the piece that you did for my exhibition. That was a sort of quite an intricate pen and ink drawing, wasn't it? That I feel fine.
Yes. The story behind it is, you know, I when I first got into comedy and suddenly realized I had permission to make art and found this just this extraordinary mode of expression and this there's just no better feeling than being in a room and an audience loving what you're doing and laughing. And I became consumed by it, and I worked so hard for so long whilst, you know, having full-time jobs running parallel. And I, for various reasons, just, I think, exhausted myself and had this experience in my late 20s of burning out and having a mental health crisis. And at the time, didn't really know where to get help from. And that drawing was done in recovery. And I think that it's interesting that I sort of rediscovered drawing. I keep rediscovering drawings at points that I really need to, like during this past year. It's there as a salve. It's this, there's this beautiful continuity throughout my life. Of being able to.
Do you find drawing something you come to when you're feeling low, like as a sort of therapy, or is it something you're always doing, but you just, the sort of themes or the ideas change depending on how you're feeling?
I think it's something that's always sort of going on in the background, but it's definitely something I turn to when I'm feeling low. It's a way to commune with the self, a way to sort of feel purposeful in sadness, and a way to, you know, to feel that I have permission to feel those emotions. Have you found art therapeutic, or is it?
Yeah, I have.
you found it therapeutic, and it's what do you end up making in that space?
I found it really helpful this year, definitely. And it's changed really day by day what I've been doing, whether it's, you know, working from photographs or way more abstract. I've started off doing like abstract landscapes, but increasingly just like enjoying the process of blurring a load of paint around on a bit of wood and seeing what marks I make. And I found that quite, it sort of lets you be a bit freer, I think, than if you're just doing a portrait where you sort of want it to look like the person, or a landscape where you want it to look like the place. It can be much more freeing just choosing colors and deciding where to smudge them around to. And
so it's completely led by feeling, and not you don't have to sort of honor any technical parts.
I mean, I probably should honor some technical parts, but yeah, I think it is generally led by feeling. I mean, unless I'm working on a commission where someone has been quite specific about what they want from it. If it's just something that I'm making for myself, I tend to be a bit looser, I think.
Was that something that just sort of came, you know, like you sat down to paint one day and it just came out, or were you sort of looking at, I don't know, abstract expressionism or you know, I don't know, ways of applying paint?
Yeah, I think it's just practice and enjoying like seeing how different ways of applying paint look on different surfaces. Like I generally work on canvas, but sometimes it's nice to work on board or wood, and you can do different things where you scrape with palette knives and you get you know, much more deliberate marks, and you have to be a bit bolder on surfaces like wood because there's no bounce like there is with a canvas. But yeah, I don't know that I've necessarily been researching abstract artists or anything. I tend to just, as you say, work on feeling. But I don't think I just woke up and could paint. Like I loved making things when I was younger, and I had an amazing art teacher at school and he taught me how to paint. And now it's just practice. I think it's like comedy. The more you gig, the better you get. And I think it's the same with art. The more you do it, the more you sort of understand it.
Yeah, definitely. And the sort of...
Do you find
that? Yeah, I find that like the more I do something, I guess the more naturally it comes to me. And
yeah,
the more naturally something comes to you, maybe certainly the better I feel. Mm-hmm. At doing it, and so I want to sort of stick with it.
And also the less pressure there is on it to be good, I think. If you're constantly gigging or constantly writing or painting, you sort of let go of that worry about failure and you just have to get on with it rather than panicking if people will like it.
Yeah, because it's not like you just have one, it doesn't feel like you only have one shot, so the thing has to be perfect. You can just kind of be in the moment of the making, and that's the real joy for me, when you're just completely, I don't know, I think in that flow state.
Mm.
Oh, it feels good.
What's your favorite medium in terms of fine art?
Probably pen and ink. I really love black and white drawings, and I love the sort of, you know, the striking nature of it, and how simple marks built up can give texture.
Yeah.
And trying to find balance between the textures on the page. I like drawing mundane things as well, what I like to call gatherings, just sort of the people in front of me at that moment. That may not merit a photograph, but making like the mundane beautiful, I think feels special now, especially as, you know, I can't just, I don't know, go grab a sandwich or, you know,
you can get draw a pint. A
sandwich, right? Yeah. Well, I think my collage is becoming like super abstract. I've ended up putting loads of red stuff on because it reminds me of the front door that we had. in Texas, and then some sort of tree type things going on.
I'm trying to work on the waves. I'm trying to like layer up the waves, but I'm trying to do, you know, Matisse's like squiggly cutouts.
Lovely.
I read that he called his cutouts drawing with scissors, which I quite like.
Oh, that's lovely. Have you ever seen his work?
I feel like I have because it's been replicated so many times, but I don't know if I've ever seen, I've not been to an exhibition of his, but I feel like his work is everywhere, isn't it?
Yeah, I really didn't care for it for so long. I was like, oh, what is this? It's just some like blocks of color on a page. And then I went to see I think his retrospective at the Tate, and I stood in front of the snail and was just blown away. The size of it, the poetic simplicity, it's just in fact I tried to make a show partly inspired by that moment of feeling like I understood the entire universe when I just saw it. You know, like that moment
he invented a new medium, didn't he?
Yeah. And I didn't realize that he sort of tried to keep it secret because he was like, he felt like he was onto something and was like, I'm not going to tell anyone, I'm working with paper. Have you ever, you know, maybe disliked somebody's work and then gone to see it and been like, actually, I'm changing my mind, this is awesome?
I feel like I really struggle, I struggle with Rothko's paintings, but they are actually impressive when you see them in person. But I just think I find the idea of them quite boring.
Yeah.
Like red on black, red on maroon, maroon on orange. Like,
you just want to yell, like, have some fun, man. Come on.
Yes. Exactly.
Crack open a can of yellow, bud. The Rothko chapel was near my house in Houston, Texas.
Oh, really?
And it's stunning. I love it so much. I used to go sit there and just, I think it's like a non-denominational space for tranquility and wonder. And you kind of sit on these chairs in the middle facing outwards and just stare at his paintings. And I remember really being taken by it and not being able to explain why either, you know, as a 12 or 13 year old, being like, you know, the stuff that I was into was quite figurative, I guess, and maybe technically, you know, quite traditional. And then this felt like, you know, the first time you see 2001 A Space Odyssey, you're like, oh my gosh, I didn't even know films could be made that way.
They are very calming, aren't they, his paintings? So I can understand why you would go there as a sort of meditative experience.
Has anyone ever asked you if you could get away with it, what painting would you steal? Or what bit of art would you steal?
That's a great question. A logistics not an issue in terms of size.
You've got the best team. You've got...
Okay. Like Ocean's 11.
You've got Ocean's 11 meets The Italian Job, Mark 1 and 2.
I think I'd like a Francis Bacon painting, maybe.
Oh, yes.
One of his sort of figurative, blurred, like quite dark cryptics or something.
And where would you hang it? Where would old Franny B hang in your house?
Bedroom, above the bed.
Above the bed? Like on the ceiling, so you're looking up at it?
No, I meant just above the, like, the actual head bit of the bed. But, yeah, maybe on the ceiling.
Do you think you'd ever have to explain it if you, like, had someone over and were like, yeah, you know, it's just a picture of my uncle?
Oh, yeah, it's just Francis Bacon that I stole. Yeah, maybe you'd have to have it somewhere subtle. That's the problem with stealing art, I find, is that you have to hide it, surely. You can't just have it. Like, whenever a painting is discovered, like a stolen painting, it's always just in some attic somewhere.
Mm.
Can't show it off, or people will people will know.
Did you see that documentary recently about the thief and the artist? The artist who specifically went to interview the person who stole her paintings.
No, that sounds
great.
Interesting.
Take a look at that. Wonderful documentary.
Yeah. What's it on?
I went to see it in the cinema during the breaks between lockdown volume 1 and 6, or wherever we are now.
Yeah.
But it might be on Curzon.
Oh, cool. So what's it called? The Thief and the Artist?
Thief and the Painter or something. And it's about like an odd couple, a sort of an unusual friendship.
Yeah.
Yeah, the artist is the observer, the power of art to connect people, redemption, all those sorts of things.
Big hitting themes.
Yeah, the big ones. The big ones scattered throughout the Bible and other religious tomes.
Using super glue and nearly stuck myself to the postcard.
Please be careful. I was told super glue was invented for medics in the Korean War to kind of quickly glue people back together.
Oh.
Don't know why I dropped that in there, but it's...
It's very powerful stuff. I don't know what else to do apart from my sun and my sea, because I want to keep it quite minimal, but I'm worried it's a bit too minimal right now.
I very much, I think, stepped into the realm of overkill.
That's what I'm worried about. Maybe I'll do a sort of bird, a seagull flying overhead.
That sounds lovely. I also have a feeling that you're not necessarily going to want this piece.
I do, definitely.
So by all means, ceremoniously burn it.
I will not do that.
If you could have been one artist in one particular moment, is there one that you've kind of thought like, oh, I want to be you?
I feel like artists don't have very enviable lifestyles often.
Yeah.
Either they were like really unsuccessful in their lifetime and are now really successful but never got to live any of the glory, like Van Gogh, or they were like drug addicts or alcoholics or paedophiles. Huge generalization. I do love Starry Night.
Banger.
Really, my colours, swirliness, feels like very magical, but also
huge tune.
It's a classic.
You know what? I genuinely was going to pick the same one. I think
really?
if there was ever a moment in human history where a sort of moment of anguish, you know, mental illness had been transformed into a piece of gorgeous escapism, it's that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, wow, what are the chances we choose the same one?
Who knows?
Gone back to spray glue from super glue.
I love that you have a glue palette.
Yeah, I didn't know that I did, but turns out a lot of options for glue. And do you own any art, Ben?
Do I own any?
Like hanging on your walls? Or...
I really love photography. I bought a photograph off my friend Coco Jackson. She went out to Australia and took a lot of black and white photographs of crisscrossing train lines, which I really liked. I have a photograph of Spike Milligan looking very anxious. I think the sort of other bits of art I own, I guess I prefer the word guardian. My friend Julia Vogel, who's an incredible artist, she's a social sculptor, often works with her audiences to generate data from which the artwork is then built from.
Wow.
We did an installation together for the London Brain Project in 2018, which is an amazing organization that pairs artists with people living with a mental health condition or a personality disorder to sort of explore through art and science what. Yeah, so I have a couple of her prints and a beautiful book she made on protest, and we also exchange work. So I'm really grateful for that friendship.
Yeah.
Whose work do you own? I guess everybody or look after. Whose work are you the guardian of?
Whose work am I the guardian of? I've got a couple of prints from my friend who is an art teacher. She's called Rosie Eden Brown. She does beautiful sort of floral abstract prints. I did some work, or I do some work with a charity called Kursler Arts, which runs an award scheme for people who are inside prisons and young offender institutes and immigration centres. So they allow them to submit artworks and then they run an award scheme and do an exhibition of their work. So I've got a print from one of those and a small sort of painting that was gifted to me by them, which is like a sort of sunset landscape, which is very beautiful. And I've got a portrait of a footballer that I bought from a guy called Adebanji Alade, who's a really good portrait artist. But there's loads of people that I've seen on Instagram that I want to buy stuff from, but I keep having to sort of rein myself in, given that I'm not really earning money.
Instagram is art porn. Every time I go on it, I just end up screenshotting like 50 people's work, being like, oh my God, one day I'll have the money and I'll come and say hi. I love your Instagram page. You've made so much work. I'm so envious of your productivity and skill.
No, but that's Instagram, I think. I'm envious of yours. I'm envious of everyone's. It's just Instagram is a horrible place to feel it. Envy, but I appreciate your kind words.
Instagram, the pit of envy, and Twitter, the pit of rage.
Yeah.
I actually find Instagram like really peaceful because I think of it just as kind of a sort of public sketchbook. Whereas Twitter, I think of as like the school magazine gone wrong. It's like everyone at the school sort of yelling two sentences at each other, but no one listening. I'm totally baffled by it. I'm totally lost on that website. But it's been very useful for sort of telling people about my work. Especially, you know, when you work as an independent artist with a small budget, a good place to tell people what's up.
Definitely. Is there anything you're working on at the moment that you want to...
Well, I would love for people to watch our beautiful film, Lock Clown.
Yeah.
I'm also working... I'm directing a theatre show, which is going to the Poplar Union in September, fingers crossed.
Oh, amazing.
By a great performer called Bryony Byrne. It's called Fangirl, and it's about women in football. And when she asked me to work with her, it made my day. But I was also like, I know nothing about either of those experiences, sort of.
Women or football.
Yeah. But the process has just been an utter delight. We've met every week during lockdown through the medium of Zoom. And just sort of diligently explored. It's just such a joy to collaborate with people. And I think it's sort of where I want to head with my art really is collaborative pieces. I was reading, I love the filmmaker Claire Dennis. She made a really great film recently called High Life with Robert Pattinson. And she talks about collaboration being the heart of the art. And to find sort of good collaborators and to make yourself into a good collaborator, I think is a really, you know, purposeful thing to be doing.
Definitely.
So yeah, definitely check out Bryony's show when it comes to the Poplar Union.
Yeah, it's going to be great.
You're quite
well placed to direct it, even though you think you don't know anything about football or being a woman, but it's probably quite useful. You know, you want audiences to be able to relate.
Yes, totally. That was the sort of point on which we agreed on. Like, my deep ignorance can somehow be useful because, the job is not just making art; it's communicating something. And
yeah.
if if I can understand, then hopefully many, many people will be able to.
Oil or watercolour?
Oil.
Portrait or landscape?
Landscape.
Can you separate the art from the artist?
I hope so, because there are a lot of naughty artists and work that they've made that I like. Please stop being dickheads, guys.
Yeah, that's a shout out to all the questionable artists in history.
Yeah.
Tortured artist or rational builder?
Ooh, rational builder, please.
Talk about or think about art?
Think about it. I'm happy to have my thoughts. And I like giving audiences space to have theirs.
Very nice. Looking at a painting close up or far away?
Far away.
Private view or view of private?
View of private. We shouldn't be exclusive about art.
Painting from life, landscape or still life?
Life. Definitely life, preferably with the person talking to me.
Mm. Art or tech?
Art, 100%.
Art or books?
Art. Art.
Art or food?
Can I have food art?
Yeah, love that. Have you got something in mind?
I don't know. I'm thinking maybe some sort of like a landscape made of vegan sushi that I can just graze my way through.
And is what you do art?
Yes, it is. It is funny art. That is what I'm trying to make.
And finally, dicks or pussies?
Oh my gosh. I will take pussies because I would... pussycats. I'll take pussycats. As a bisexual, it's unfair to make me choose between all of the flavours that I like. So, inspired by the red front door. Oh, I love yours. It's gorgeous. I love how big the sun is and how the sun's rays are sort of like wonky fingers.
It's not really like a Cornish seascape because there wouldn't be that much sun in Cornwall, but artistic license.
The sun is it's gently stroking the waves into a sort of fever pitch. What a saucy sun. Good
the
Lord.
Neon waves.
I love the colour of the waves. They're gorgeous. This is mine.
Wow. That's
so you've
amazing.
Got three trees, lots of autumn leaves, because we used to rake them up in the front yard. And lots of red, like the red doors, and a lemon, orange in the sky for the sun.
Oh, it's an actual orange.
Yeah.
That's funny because I actually hate oranges, Ben. So that's the only bit.
Oh, wait, no, it's not real.
Orange.
I'll take it off.
I love how vibrant it is. It's so detailed and so evocative. What a brilliant collage. What a brilliant artist. I love doing that.
Likewise.
What a delightful man. Thank you so much for listening to that. Hope you enjoyed the episode. If you did, why not leave us a nice little review? And subscribe, download, blah, blah, blah. If you want to see mine and Ben's postcards from today's episode, then check out @secretartpod on social media. Follow Ben on social media @BenTarjay. And remember to watch his beautiful short film, Lock Clown, which is available on Turtle Canyon Comedy's YouTube channel. I'm on Instagram, I'm on Twitter, of course I am. Links are all in the description for that sort of thing. So have a lovely week and thank you again for joining us. Goodbye. Secret Artists is a Turtle Canyon comedy production for Acast. Music by Alistair Clayton, Quickfire Round music by Steve Dunn.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.